Let's take a look at the second section, the mitzvah. According to Torah law, if you see somebody violating a mitzvah, number four, you shall rebuke your friend. You shall not bear a sin because of him. Now, that happens to be a very sophisticated quote that has a lot of literature on it. Because if you take that verse at face value, what are you supposed to do if you see somebody walking into a non-kosher restaurant? Be a little biblical, you know? You shall rebuke him! What are you going to do?
Well, according to this quote, you're supposed to pull away. Change the mind.
If you are witnessing somebody else going into a non-kosher restaurant,
aren't you supposed to judge him favorably?
No. It depends on the case. I mean, if they're going in there to eat, I'm not talking that they're walking in to use the restrooms.
Yeah, remind them that this isn't a kosher restaurant. You know, you don't have to say you shouldn't go in there. You just, but if you say, you know that that's not a kosher restaurant, and that it could cause them to think.
Good. It's all very good practical. I want to work back, though, to biblical. Very strict biblical reading of the text before we understand our traditions. You shall rebuke your friend.
Tell him not to go in.
Tell him? Tell him? Just tell him?
Seems like force.
Scream at him! Yell at him! Rebuke him! How do you rebuke somebody? You tell him off. Okay? Strict reading. We need to get a little sophisticated, though. Because the word that was used in the pasuk is tochacha. Tochacha in its original root form means to clarify. It doesn't mean rebuke. It's used in this context to be rebuke. But the method of rebuke is to clarify. And on that note, you're very correct. You have to figure out what is missing in the person's awareness that's causing him to act in that way. And whatever it's missing in the components, you have to clarify. Maybe the person didn't know it's non-kosher. Maybe he doesn't know that there's a law in the Torah that says don't eat non-kosher. Maybe he knows there's a law in the Torah, but was taught that the laws of Torah don't matter today. Maybe he thinks that not eating kosher is a law that only applies to rabbis. Lots of options. You have to know what is missing and then go ahead and clarify it. In today's generation, usually what's missing is what?
Education.
Knowledge.
Inspiration. Mm-hmm. Most people know that they're not supposed to eat non-kosher. It's true, education, they may not know what non-kosher means. But most often it's inspiration. Most often, they just don't have the
desire, background
to have the strength to recognize the importance of not doing it. The end of the pasuk is also very powerful. You shall not bear a sin because of him. Don't let this interchange, this exchange with the person, result in your getting a sin. How would you get a sin?
Embarrassing.
If you start doing things that are inappropriate. You embarrass a person without the correct dynamic. It's incorrect. You call a person privately and tell them. You talk to them respectfully. There are a million different nuances.
Isn't it also true that if one Jew commits a sin, it's bad for all the Jews?
Yes. We have an analogy that a Jew says, so I'm doing whatever violation, what does it concern you? So we try to point out that we're all in it on the same boat. And if a guy would start drilling a hole under his seat on the boat, everybody would get angry with him, and he would, of course, say, it's only under my seat. If I dig it under your seat, then you can complain. But it's under my seat, and the water's only coming in under my seat, and you have no business complaining about my behavior. But if we understand that we're all in on the same boat, then yes, there's a national impetus to try and encourage people towards increased observance.
Is that considered self-serving?
It depends on the attitude. If the person views the boat picture with the amount of love that's supposed to be engendered by that analogy, then it's not considered self-serving. Because I'm loving the other person just as much as I'm loving myself. My point is that we're in this together. If, yeah, I don't care about the other person, I'm just concerned with the water that's coming in, so that's self-serving. But if the person recognizes that the whole analogy is built on the fact that we're in this together, so even before I complain about the water, I understand the love that we're on the same boat together. So then that's a national love, that's a love just as much for the other person as it is for me. We're both losing when you do that behavior. Okay, number five. You shall not stand idly by while your brother's blood is shed. And it doesn't matter who's shedding it, who's being destructive, even if the person is being self-destructive. Again, if you don't have the background, if you haven't attended Gateways, then how do you know that the person's shedding their own blood? How do you know that they're being destructive? But if you appreciate that the Torah is our guidebook for life, then our perspective is that person is being destructive without realizing that they're being destructive, and it's a mitzvah to help them out, to inform them of what the Torah says on that topic. Again, number six, similar concept, love your neighbor as yourself. If I was doing something stupid, if I would want someone to tell me. You ever drive down a one-way street the wrong way?
Yes.
Isn't it great when people start screaming at you and yelling?
Boy.
The first reaction is trepidation. Why are they screaming at me? The second reaction is, I'm so thankful. Because the person, if I would have gotten to the other end of the street, that's very dangerous. Because the people turning into a one-way street don't expect someone coming at them. You're thankful for being corrected. I have here in shul sometimes, it's very funny, we have a person who davens as the leader for a full, almost a full year, because a parent died. So he's up there day after day after day, and he makes the same reading mistake again and again and again. And, you know, if it was just one time, so you humor it, which I do. I don't sit correcting people. It's not my job. But it's again and again. So I go over to him and I tell him, you know, respectfully and everything, that there's a specific word that I'd like him to go back and read slowly so that we can clarify how it's supposed to be pronounced. So we do it. And I'm very thankful. Baruch Hashem, he took it the right way. And he turns to me and says, Rabbi, if there are any other places that I'm mispronouncing, if you could please let me know. So I said, don't worry, I'll let you know. I once read a story of a person who was praying for the Amud as a leader, and his reading was impeccable, just gorgeous. So someone asked him, you know, where does he come to read so perfectly? He said that when his father died, he was reading as leader, and people would scream out corrections. A very open society, and he mispronounced something. Someone screamed at him. So at first it bothered him, and he was very frustrated with it. And he thought about it for a day or two and realized, you know, listen, I don't have such a strong background in Hebrew. They're correcting me legitimately. I don't like their style, but the fact is they're right. So what should I do? So he decided on the dollar policy. He went over to anybody who corrected him in the past 2 days and said, you caught me on a mistake, you deserve a dollar. He had to distribute about $5 for the first 2 days. Okay? And he said, and from now on, this is the policy. If I make a mistake, you call it out and you get a dollar. By the end of the year, his davening was perfect. And he turned the whole thing right side up. Because now it wasn't an accusation. He's helping me. He corrected me. Thank you. I was driving down a one-way street the wrong way. Or if you're ever driving at night without your headlights and a neighbor screams at you. Again, a surge of thankfulness. Thanks for correcting me. And that's six. Love your neighbor as yourself. If it's done with the right attitude, then people sense that you meant only good. Number seven is actually a very fascinating one. It deals with the laws of lost objects. The mitzvah is you shall return it to him. So you shall do for any lost article of your brother. So we actually learn a lot of different things from that verse. One of the things, by the way, is the mitzvah to heal a person. Medicine. Medicine, generally, is not so overtly listed in the Torah, but this is considered one of the mitzvahs that one fulfills when he heals another person. You're returning a lost object, certainly if you return the person's life to them, their own health. It's an even greater level of returning a lost object than if you just return their pen that they lost. The pen is external. If you return their health, you're returning something very dear to them. Likewise, if you return a person's soul, you get them focused on their religious mission in life, that's considered a very powerful act, a mitzvah, a way of helping a person. And finally, back to the boat analogy, number eight, you are children to Hashem, your God. What happens if you're all children to Hashem? What's our relationship between one another? If we're all children of the same father, so to speak, so we're brothers and sisters. So we're all in this together. And that's the same principle of caring for another person.